We live in very uncertain financial times, and I think that the knowledgeable people are very, very concerned. If you read with the people who certainly are managing the multi-billion dollar funds are saying, they're very concerned. James Corbett, pick up the story and tell us what you think.
Well, thank you for having me on today, Dr. Stan. And just in case anyone out there is wondering, yes, I have a little bit of a cold, so I might sound a bit different today. But unfortunately, your assessment there is correct. We are living through some pretty severe economic times. And again, this is being reflected in the data and statistics that come out, manipulated as they may be, as long as you know where to look for that data. And unfortunately, you're not going to find it in any of the data that's trumpeted as the types of statistics we should be looking at. For example, the manipulated unemployment rate that you and I have talked about many times before on this program, which is now sitting at 7.3%, which sounds relatively healthy until you realize that this is on top of a labor participation rate, which has dropped to a 35-year low. For those who don't know, the labor force participation rate is the percentage of adult workers who are actually employed. That plunged by 932,000 jobs in the past, in this month's data. And that's the big part of this equation that is not being factored into that 7.3%.
900,000 jobs this last quarter, this last month?
That's it. Yes, it's just dropped 932,000 from 63.2% to 62.8%, the lowest since 1978.
And the average American doesn't understand that because, certainly, although figures don't lie, liars figure, they control the media, and people are not getting the truth. And so basically, this is why I do what I do, why James does what he does. Make your plans accordingly, ladies and gentlemen, because most people are going to get wiped out when the whole House of Cards comes down. We'll be back in a moment with Mr. Corbett. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is James Corbett, and James is pointing out what's really going on with the labor market. Now, if you're reading the financial pages for the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post, you're hearing how great things are and certainly how all the survey we created 200,000 new jobs last month, and isn't that just wonderful? Of course, we created all 200,000 new jobs, but the unemployment rate went up. Well, how could the unemployment rate go up? And James is just saying that last month, because they tell you about all the new jobs, they don't mention that over 900,000 jobs that were lost last month. You pick up the story, James.
It is unbelievable. Well, it's not jobs that are lost. It's just people that are not employed that have fallen off of the unemployment radar. So the labor participation rate, again, the number, the percentage of people who are of adult working age and who are not employed, or who are employed, actually, and that has dropped from 63.2% to 62.8%. Again, that's 932,000 people have dropped off of that radar. And that was the third highest monthly increase in people falling out of the labor force in the history of the United States. So pretty severe, pretty shocking figure, really, when you think about it. And yet I do monitor some of the mainstream financial information to see what the official propaganda is. And I was listening to one program which noted in one of their segments this unbelievably high figure of 932,000 people dropping out of the labor force. And then in the very next segment, they were talking about the reason the S&P and the Dow is going up so much these days is because unemployment is going down towards the Fed's target of 6%. It's this weird doublespeak that they're doing, and I guess they hope that people won't understand just what this unemployment figure really means, because the only reason the unemployment figures are so low is because more and more people are falling off of the labor force participation altogether. That is, people who have been off of the rolls for long enough, of course, aren't figured into that unemployment number. So basically, if you're unemployed for a very long time, suddenly you're not unemployed at all, simply by virtue of the way that they manipulate these figures. So again, I think it's important to stress that this is all manipulation, but I don't think that probably needs pointing out to a lot of your listeners who probably do understand this on the day-to-day level of what they're living through.
But of course, basically, the tragic sort of a situation, despite all the optimism, they tell us things are getting better, and suddenly the Fed is going to be able to cut back on investing the $85 billion they're investing every month. They're having to go out and borrow almost $1 trillion a year to keep the whole thing from collapsing. But they're not going to tell you that. They're simply lying and lying and lying. This is Dr. Stan, I guess, is James Corbett, and we're simply talking about the fact that things are bad. We're told, things are really getting better now. So see, why the stock market went up the other day. My goodness, went to a new all-time high, and the Standard & Poor's at a new all-time high, and the Dow Jones is doing so great because everybody is really so optimistic, and they're really optimistic because, of course, the Federal Reserve is going to be able to cut back on having to put $85 billion, maybe they can cut it down to, instead of $85 billion a month, maybe to 80 or 75 or even to 60. Ladies and gentlemen, if they cut back putting money and pouring money into the economy, the whole house of cards will come down. They know that, but they control the media, they control our reality, and they laugh at how stupid we are because we believe what we read in the newspaper. So what's really going on, Sydney? What's happening over in Europe? My understanding that things aren't much better over in Europe, where the real unemployment rate on average is well over 12.5%. Is that really true?
Unfortunately, yes, it is. And that's not the only bleak figure coming out of Europe these days. In fact, a lot of people are pointing to the Eurozone's almost deflationary cycle that they're getting into. And there's a lot of talk these days about how the Eurozone is looking more and more like Japan was in the 1990s when it started its deflationary cycle. So we have the Eurozone's inflation rate for October came in at 0.7%. which is down from September's 1.1%, which is much, much below the European Central Bank's target of just below 2%. So people are starting to talk about whether or not the Eurozone is entering a deflationary cycle, or at least a disinflationary cycle. And so as a result, the European Central Bank last week did a surprise rate cut that very few people were actually expecting. They cut their key lending rate by 25 basis points last Thursday, and that took the markets a bit by surprise. And people thought, well, they're trying to stimulate inflation again in the Eurozone. And so it makes sense economically. It's just no one was really expecting it because the ECB tends to be very, very conservative in terms of not wanting to increase inflation at all. So this took the markets a bit by surprise. And as a result, immediately after this, we saw a jump, for example, in the gold price, as you would expect when a major central bank announces a rate cut. Obviously, that means there's going to be more money flooding the markets. That means the value of that money is going to go down. That means the value of gold comparatively should go up. And that's what we saw initially. But then the ECB's head, Mario Draghi, came out with a speech talking about disinflationary headwinds in the Eurozone economy, and that sent gold prices plummeting again. And so we saw a pretty big drop last week in gold prices towards the end of the week. And now we've crossed well below that $1,300 mark and trading down into the 1270 range now. So we've seen a pretty big, and that wasn't, of course, just gold. That was commodities pretty much across the board had a big fall as a result of this, because people are now paying attention to the European Central Bank's moves and the Eurozone's possibility of entering a type of disinflationary cycle where they can't get inflation going again, and they can't really grow their economy at all. So the Eurozone crisis continues to fester. It's just a question of whether or not it's on people's radar.
But James, don't you think all of this is really manipulated? Don't you think that Dow Jones, the Standard & Poor's, certainly all these are manipulated, the price of commodities, gold and silver and platinum, and some of the interest rates? This has nothing to do with the free market. It has nothing to do with the economy. Basically, there are people who manipulate all of these things, trying to hold this together until, of course, something comes up where they can really get the economy going, like maybe another war. Then wars are wonderful as far as getting the economy going. That's how they got the Second World, how they got the economy going after the Depression there in the 1930s. They had to have a great war, and basically because after war got the economy going. And basically, Chris, don't you think most of what's going on today is manipulation until they get another event where we can suddenly get the economy moving again?
I certainly do agree with that. I think that, of course, all of these rates and figures and statistics and even the prices of many of these commodities are deeply manipulated. But at the same time, I think that they do tend to respond in various ways to the types of things that are happening in the markets, which themselves, I think, are often manipulated events. But, I mean, we can at least make sense of the movements of some of these prices with regards to what's happening. For example, the European Central Bank rate cuts and then the gold price and other commodity prices moving into tandem, that makes sense economically speaking. The degree to which those prices move, how much they move, I think, again, depends quite heavily on the types of manipulations that go on in these markets. So I think you're right, but I suppose on the bigger scale of things, for people who are looking to actually invest or to make sound investment decisions, unfortunately, even if it is manipulated, I think we have to take into account the types of events that are being sort of dangled in front of us and the types of things that they're talking about. And another thing that's on the radar, I think, or coming on the radar, is something that was pointed out on a post by Pivot Farm that was reposted on Zero Hedge the other day, talking about the record levels of U.S. dollar currency reserves around the world, pointing out this the South Korean Central Bank, the European Central Bank, holding more and more U.S. dollars in their currency reserve baskets. Which means a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the demand for U.S. dollars around the world, as that rises, the U.S. dollar starts to strengthen. And as that happens, commodity prices start to fall. So that can partially account for the lowering gold prices that we've seen. But also, it means that if and when the U.S. dollar actually starts to fall, which is really the idea of what quantitative easing is all about, trying to get the U.S. dollar more competitive on the international markets, it means that all of these central banks can start flooding the markets with their U.S. dollars, and really they can manipulate the value of the U.S. dollar up or down with these reserves to suit their own trading purposes, their own investment purposes, which is a pretty precarious thing. But unfortunately, that's exactly where the U.S. is, given its U.S. World Reserve currency status. So I think this is something that people should be thinking about, is the U.S. dollar index and where it's heading and where it might head in the future with these U.S. dollar reserves that could come flooding back into the country at any time from any number of sources around the world, as pretty much every central bank holds most of its currency reserves in U.S. dollars. And I think that's another aspect of what we've seen, as I say, with the commodity prices plunging last week, as we see the U.S. dollar index starting on a bit of an uptick. And those two things are closely related as well.
Well, James, do we have any idea how many dollars there are out throughout the world, so that we have an idea how many we have here in the United States? But how much actually money is there that we've actually gotten other countries to hold in the way of their reserves, that they hold dollars as their reserves, as a reserve currency? Because if that ever suddenly starts to pour back in the United States, people lose confidence in it. It would destroy the value of our currency and impoverish our people. What are we really talking about? Are we talking about $30 billion or 40 or probably 30 trillion or certainly 40 or 60 trillion? Do we have any idea?
I don't have that number on the top of my head, so I could search that out for you. But I do know that international banks have about $850 billion in U.S. dollars sitting in their vaults, quote unquote, at the moment, as sort of a way of riding out whatever future storm comes in the U.S. dollar markets. So we know that the private banks have $850 billion U.S. dollars, and that's, of course, not even beginning to take into account the central bank reserves. But again, as I say, I don't have the overall figure for how many dollars are out there. I'm sure we could look that up easily enough. But I know, for example, the Bank of Korea, as of October 2013, stands at $343 billion in U.S. Foreign exchange reserves. And that's just the Bank of Korea alone. So, I mean, start adding that up with the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and other banks around the world, and you're going to come into a figure that's definitely in the trillions.
Well, the figure I have in the back of my mind is about $30 trillion. Don't hold me to that. But basically, if that all starts to flood back in the United States, it would simply destroy the life savings of most of the American people. It would destroy the value of the pensions that people are holding, the annuities that people are holding, the bonds that people are holding. Anything simply that's tied to the dollar would be simply wiped out. And now, I'm not to say that people shouldn't have some money. money on hand, but they even need to think about what's going to happen when they destroy the value of the dollar, because this is, seems to be the direction things are heading. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the reason, of course, they can destroy the value of our currency is because it has nothing behind it other than the integrity of Barack Obama. And if you believe what he says is true, that he said he would never allow something like this to happen, why then you should hang on to your dollars. But if you believe that the current administration is made up of people who are not being truthful with the American people, you better stop and think what happens to a nation that turns its back on legitimacy. And basically, because the best way to destroy a nation is to destroy its currency. This has happened over and over again down through the ages, going back for thousands of years. And this is what happens to a nation that goes into a downward spiral. And I'm concerned that we're beginning, not yet, we're not there yet, but that we're going to have a downward spiral, not only morally and spiritually, but financially. What are your thoughts, James?
Well, I will echo those sentiments, and just for the record, for people who are interested, I'm just on the IMF's website right now, imf.org, and as of 2013, the second quarter, they're showing $11.1 trillion in total foreign exchange holdings in the world, of which $3.76 trillion is in U.S. dollars specifically. So that's from the IMF, and take those numbers for what they're worth, but that's what they're estimating at as of the second quarter. But anyway, as you're saying, I think the dollar price is going to be more and more something that I think really starts to determine the value of international exchange. I think the U.S. dollar index is something that we need to be watching carefully, because as you say, this is the type of thing which doesn't really affect the average American on a day-to-day basis in sort of their everyday reality. But it is something that overall is going to have a huge effect on what they're able to purchase down the road, especially as more and more of their goods are being purchased that are being manufactured overseas and imported back into the country from, of course, China and other countries like that. And the value of the U.S. dollar plays a huge role in terms of what people are able to buy with regards to those goods. So it's not the type of thing that people see in their day-to-day life that they understand.
Hold that thought. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is James Corbett, and we're typically talking about, and I didn't mean to interrupt you there, James, but we had to go to a quick break. You go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add, I know we're talking about this pretty much every week, but again, it sort of comes up pretty much every week, and I just wanted to point out, we've talked quite a bit about the replacement of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, and how that's becoming more and more a likely reality in the coming years, certainly in the coming decades. We're going to, I think, see some sort of transition off of the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency. And another indication of that came just a couple of weeks ago when the Chinese state-run news agency, Xinhua, actually published a commentary in which they said, quote, as U.S. politicians of both political parties are still shuffling back and forth between the White House and the Capitol Hill without striking a viable deal, talking about the government shutdown that was taking place at the time, it is perhaps a good time for the befuddled world to start considering building a de-Americanized world. And they go on to call for the replacement of the U.S. dollar as the core of the global financial system. And again, this isn't something that I think should be surprising to anyone, but the way that they're coming out and pretty much explicitly stating this now is something to take note of, because of course this is exactly what we're expecting, and this is not exactly the type of diplomatic language we're used to hearing in a lot of these types of international settings. So I think the fact that it's now openly being called for the replacement of the U.S. dollar is something to take note of. And another thing to take note of with regards to that particular commentary, again in the state-run news agency Xinhua, is that they call for a new world order in which all nations, big or small, poor or rich, can have their key interests respected and protected on an equal footing. So once again, we see the New World Order coming into view, as George Bush said back in 1991, and it is part of a much, much bigger plan for the replacement of the entire world system as we know it today, with a system that is going to be one that really only benefits those at the very, very top of the apex of the pyramid. And I think we have to be very concerned about what's coming in, and we really do have to try to resist this in any way that we can.
what do you foresee happening as far as the average American is concerned, the average American out there in the listening audience? What is going to happen to them as we move away from the dollar as the reserve currency of the world? I mean, we've had it pretty good for a long period of time. We've been able to buy things very, very cheaply. Certainly the living standards of the American people has been one of the highest the world has ever seen. But what does the future hold from your point of view?
Well, you are right. I mean, certainly being the world reserve currency does have its benefits and its perks. And I think that was something that Nixon realized back in the 1970s when he took the U.S. off the gold standard and basically said that the U.S. dollar was now going to be backed up simply by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, as opposed to $35 per ounce of gold, as had been the standard established under Bretton Woods. And with that magical move, suddenly the U.S. government could print as much money as it ever wanted, and the entire world was happy to snap it all up. They would snap up the U.S. debt without hesitation, because, of course, the U.S. Government is the soundest government on the planet, and there's no way it's ever going to default. As we move into this new economic era, and as the U.S. dollar starts to become replaced, eclipsed by whatever the new international norm is going to be.
Hold that thought, James. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and suddenly I had asked James, what is going to happen as the dollar began to lose its position as the primary currency of the world? And of course, James was just saying, what a wonderful time we've had. We've certainly had a wonderful time going back to 1971 when we went off the gold standard. And then everybody in the world suddenly wanted the dollar. It was the most stable currency in the world. It became the world reserve currency. And so we were able to simply to import all sorts of things very economically into the United States, very cheap cars and machinery, all sorts of things from all over the world. Other people wanted our currency. They wanted a stable currency. And it's really been a wonderful run from 1971 for the last 42 years or so. But now everything is beginning to change. And there's talk about Sydney doing away with the dollar as the reserve currency. And this has real implications as far as the savings of the average American, because, of course, we're tied to a paper currency that has nothing behind it but the integrity of our leaders. And I don't really have much faith in the integrity of these people, because I will tell you, a lot of them, if you see what the big boys are doing, they're getting out of dollars because they know the whole house of cards is coming down. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-295. Our guest is James Corbett, and he's simply talking about what happens to a nation as its currency begins to lose position, lose stature in the world. James, pick up the story.
Well, as I was saying, of course, as you picked up there, as the U.S. dollar starts to wane in terms of its utility as the global reserve currency, and as people stop buying up the U.S. debt as soon as it's created, and as the Federal Reserve, and if and when it begins its actual tapering, which I'm still quite skeptical about, then ultimately the U.S. dollar, the U.S. government does not find that it's able to print as much debt as it used to be able to. And again, we talked about the manipulation and where this is heading. I think ultimately this is where this is heading. I think that that the ultimate plan is to basically bankrupt the U.S. government spiritually, morally, economically, and otherwise, and to make it into basically a completely untenable system that will have to collapse at some point. And from the ashes of that, I think they're going to try to bring the new world order system into place, exactly as that Xinhua article we were talking about earlier called for. And I think this is the ultimate game plan, because obviously you can't build a new global order unless the old global order goes under. And the old global order is the superpower America global order that has been in place since the end of the Second World War. And at some point, I think they're going to simply crash the system as it is. That means crashing the American economy and the American government's ability to continue printing debt as much as it wants. And at that point, I think we're going to see really the beginning of the crisis phase, where we move into the basically the solutions phase, which of course will be all of the types of solutions that the New World Order has been carefully implanting in the public's consciousness for all this time, the decades and decades of the idea of a global monetary system that I think has been the ultimate dream ever since back in the 1940s, when even John Maynard Keynes and others were talking about the bancor as the global currency that could serve as the global reserve currency. They didn't get that at the time, but all it will take is a new crisis. And as you said earlier, I think that a new war would go a long way towards helping out with that process. So I think we're probably, just looking at what would make the most sense in terms of getting this new system into place, it would be an economic collapse combined with some sort of war that would be the likeliest way that we would see that achieved. And unfortunately, we see both of those things coming into view as the economy continues to start to deteriorate, and as the nations of the world continue lining up, especially China, Russia, and Iran, against the NATO power bloc in the sign of what could be a potential third world war. So, unfortunately, we keep heading towards that brink, and however many years out from that brink we might be, it becomes clearer and clearer with each passing day that that's where they want to send us, ultimately.
Well, what will happen to the life savings of so many people, you know, who've worked hard all of their life, and they've got their money invested in conventional investments, whether it be bonds or certainly in annuities or in pension funds? What's going to happen to them when the dollar begins to suddenly lose value?
Well, if it's in bonds or annuities or pension funds, then I'm afraid that they're not going to have a fun time with that. Certainly, as the U.S. dollar starts to wane, that's going to eat into what any type of fixed income, and I think there's going to be a very big problem with that. And of course, entitlements are going to be much more difficult to attain or to use in the future. So if people are invested in that specifically, I think they're going to have a very hard time with this.
And this is my fear, and our plea to people is, begin make your plans now. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-2295. You have a question or comment, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cindy, what's happening as far as our banking system? Is our banking system certainly getting back to a pretty solid foundation? What about the European banks? What about the Swiss banks? Are they getting better? Now, we find an awful lot of the Swiss banks are saying, telling the Americans they don't want their money anymore, and a lot of people, Americans who had very legitimately had their money in foreign banks, are being told by those banks they don't want their dollars anymore. What's your impression about that?
Well, I think that's to do specifically with some of the new restrictions that the U.S. government is trying to bring in on the holdings of U.S. nationals around the world. And as a result of that, they're requiring banks around the world to have increasingly more invasive controls over their U.S. U.S. dollar holdings and U.S. national reserve dollar accounts. So for example, of course, the Swiss banking system is world renowned for being secretive. If you want money kept privately, you want to keep it in a Swiss numbered bank account. But because they're being forced to comply with U.S. government regulations about finding keeping information about their customers and making that more widely known to the U.S. government, there's a lot of Swiss banks that are actually declining to hold accounts for U.S. customers. And that is going to be an increasing problem as the U.S. government demands more and more transparency of accounts as a result, of course, of their attempt to basically control and crack down on people daring to hold money outside of the U.S. government system and outside the clutches of the Treasury and the IRS. So this is something that's developing, and I think we've seen that in recent years, specifically in the Swiss system, but it is happening around the world as the U.S. government basically tries to clamp down more and more on holdings out of U.S. citizens outside the country. And this is something that I think is going to have an increasing presence in a lot of Americans' lives, specifically Americans who are living overseas or trying to move overseas, as they find that there's really nowhere that they can go in the world to escape the clutches of the IRS. And it's important for Americans to note that basically, I mean, there is no government in the world that goes after its citizens' holdings of money outside of the country more vehemently than the U.S. does. And the IRS, basically, to escape them, you pretty much have to renounce your U.S. citizenship. Which is
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Here, our guest, of course, is James Corbett. And basically, we have a couple of callers on the line, Peter from Pittsburgh, certainly Bruce from Durham, Michigan. Our telephone number is 1-888. That's 888-24-LIBERTY, 888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. And before we go on, I'll ask our listeners to be patient. Why, James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster, where you write an editorial certainly twice a week, and then how they can get in touch with you and get subscribed to your personal publications?
Absolutely. Well, for people who don't know, the International Forecaster is a biweekly newsletter. It comes out every Wednesday and Saturday, and it contains 30 to 40 pages of information on all sorts of economic and financial and social topics, political topics. So I think it's a great source of information. And it does, as you say, include my lead editorial every week as well, every twice a week. So people who are interested in checking out the International Forecaster can go to the website, theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word. Don't forget the. theinternationalforecaster.com, and you can find some of my editorials. You can find some of the other articles that are featured there. You can also get a free introductory copy if it's your first time subscribing, and you can just subscribe outright to the periodical there. Or if you're interested in getting information via mail, you can write into the Forecaster at P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. For people who are interested in myself, I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And if you go there, you can find out more information about the work that I do, the podcasts and videos and interviews. And I also have my own subscriber newsletter, which comes out once a week on Saturdays. And people can help support the website by signing up for that.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Peter, who's calling us in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-2295. And Peter from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, good evening from where I am. James Corbett, as of just recently, it showed that it was on Stratus that Saudi Arabia was looking to purchase nuclear weapons from Pakistan. And if that is the case, does this mean that the talk of Saudi Arabia moving away from the U.S. protective umbrella means that they are leaving actually the petrodollar system and are getting themselves some nuclear weapons for the transitive period, which would pretend to a sooner end of the petrodollar in the world reserve currency?
All right.
Your response.
All right. James, how would you respond to Peter? Peter's concerned because we're hearing that Saudi Arabia seems to be moving away from the United States, seems to be trying to get hold of nuclear weapons and perhaps even drawing closer to Russia. Where do you see this? Is this all simply a ploy? Is this something they're putting on to mislead us? Or is this are the alliances over in the Middle East beginning to shift? And shift dramatically.
Yes, they are, and my applause to you for picking up on that story. I think it's a very important one. This I first saw on BBC News, Saudi nuclear weapons on order from Pakistan, which indicates that, in fact, the Saudis have already paid for a nuclear weapon from Pakistan. They have not accepted delivery yet, and presumably won't until or unless Iran actually gets on the cusp of creating their own nuclear weapon. But supposedly, this is what it's about. Saudi is trying to counter the Iranian nuclear program by making sure that they have a nuclear weapon of their own. So this is a pretty serious development. And I think perhaps the most interesting part of all of this is that we're seeing not only this story in particular, but a lot of stories about Saudi Arabia are now being openly covered in the corporate-controlled and government-controlled media in the West, including CFR member Fareed Zakaria on CNN and his show. He's been quite vocally against Saudi Arabia in recent months, talking about what a threat they are and how international terrorism comes from Saudi Arabia. I think all of this indicates, exactly as you're saying, that we are seeing this shift right now away from that petrodollar system that's been in place since the 1970s, and Saudi Arabia being completely under the military umbrella of the United States. And I think we are seeing that shift happening right now, right before our very eyes. And again, I place this in the context of that recent story that China has now become the world's largest oil importer, surpassing American oil imports. And I think Saudi Arabia understands that the future of their oil business is going to be more likely in China than it is in America, as 70% of world oil purchases are going to be coming from China by 2020, or at least that's the projection. So I do think we're seeing a shift right now, a very, very fundamental shift taking place. And this nuclear weapons story is just one aspect of that.
Atticus, Peter, I am very concerned that this foreshadows a nuclear war in that part of the world. Anything else you'd like to ask before we let you go?
No. You gentlemen have a good evening. James Corbett, I always enjoy hearing from you. And Dr. Stan, God bless you and have a good evening.
God bless you. Thanks very much for calling. And let's go now to Bruce, who's calling from Durham, Michigan. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Bruce, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, back when Cyprus had their bank money tax or whatever it was that happened to it when they took people's money away from them, I kept hearing about the $20,000 limit. Oh, what was it about that? The people under $20,000 weren't touched, but those over were touched, some of them up to like a 40% tax. Could that happen in this country? What was so special about $20,000? And should I've got about $29,000 in two different banks. Should I bring them both down so they're under $20,000?
Well, actually, it was 100,000 euros in the Cyprus bank bail-in that they did. That was basically the amount that was supposedly guaranteed by the European, basically the European Central Bank guarantees 100,000 euros of savings in any government, in any bank that's officially approved by the government. So they decided that anyone who had more than 100,000 euros, they were going to lose 47% of anything above that figure. So that was the magical cutoff for the in the ECB area. But as for the United States situation, I don't know that number off the top of my head. Perhaps Dr. Stan knows what the actual savings limit is for protected.
The FDIC is a couple of hundred thousand dollars, and basically they guarantee it. But remember, Bruce, Everything can change overnight, and politicians lie. You can tell what a politician is lie because he's speaking. And basically, we don't know what the future holds, but right now, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, I believe, Sydney, guarantees at least $100,000, and it may well still be a couple of hundred thousand. Anything else you'd like to ask?
Because earlier in the program, you mentioned that some big investors are holding cash rather than putting it in the stock market or maybe the big bank. Do you mean that they're just literally sitting on suitcases of greenbacks?
Yes, we're talking about central banks' reserve holdings. So these aren't investors. These are actually central banks, the government, supposedly government-run central banks of various countries that hold foreign exchange reserves for a number of reasons to basically manipulate their currency prices up or down and to account for current account trade deficits or surpluses. And so they do hold a certain amount of currency reserves at any given time, and it looks like they're holding more and more dollars at this current time, which they can use as basically a bulwark against a rising or falling dollar as need be. So these are central banks that are holding those currencies. They always hold a certain amount of currency, but it just looks like they're holding more U.S. dollars specifically at this time than usual.
Anything else, Bruce?
Well, I wonder if Mr. Corbett thinks that the Obamacare debacle will bring about a stock market crash, that not enough young people will go on these exchanges, and it'll go way in the red and bring about some kind of crash. What does he think?
I couldn't imagine a way in which this would in any way be beneficial for the equities markets. I can't imagine how people would have, I mean, so much of the discretionary spending is going to be cut into by these Obamacare premium hikes that I can't imagine. But again, the entire market right now seems to be manipulated by the big investors and by the big banks. So I don't know if it reflects at all the average, you know, ma and pa average Joe type of savings anymore. I think that this is really more like institutional investors and pension funds and large groups that are playing the markets right now. And I don't know to what extent this is going to have an effect. But I think you're exactly right. I can't imagine how young people who are going to be forced to buy into Obamacare at ridiculously high premiums are going to be able to afford to invest in the stock market. So I think that that's going to be a complete pipe dream. And going on from here, I mean, again, this is just a completely unsustainable rally that we're seeing in the Dow and the S&P right now.
Okay, Bruce, and I certainly agree with that. But something big is offering, and I'm not sure what it is. Whether it's going to be a financial collapse, whether it's going to be a collapse over in Europe, whether it's going to be a collapse in China. But the whole world financial system is simply hanging by a thread, and anything to push it over. They're having to pour in, here in the United States, over $1 trillion a year just to keep this thing going. And that's what it's all about. As they start cutting back, the whole house of cards comes down. And suddenly this, we are keeping Europe going. They got over a 12% unemployment rate in Europe on average. So they were actually lending all sorts of money to the European Central Bank. They're lending it to the banks over there. Everything is simply suddenly being held up on stilts. And sooner or later, and we're talking probably within a year or two, something major is going to happen. I'm not sure what's going to be. Fascinating to see it unfold. Anything else, Bruce, before we let you go?
Thanks a lot.
God bless. Let's go. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. We've got Rich calling from Aromas. Hi, Rich. You have a question or comment?
Hello, Grandpa Liberty. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Good to hear from you, Rich.
Yes, it is always a privilege and honor, especially to talk to Mr. James. Regarding that FDIC, Stephen Quayle was saying that as of 2014, the banking is changing to where it's not your money and it. They could confiscate it in time of crisis, and they weren't going to be guaranteeing it at those high limits anymore. Just to touch on that. Now, Reverend Lindsay's always talking about, the elites always say, if it's written on paper, it's only as good as the paper that it's written on. Well, here's a good example. Safeway Corporation sold, and the bigwigs were dumping the stock. All the bigwigs on the board and stuff were dumping all their stock the last two or three weeks. So now the little people, their shares are all pretty much taking a dive. So my friend was telling me that he worked at another grocery store, and he was saying how he had all this money in this and that and the stock market. And I told him, I've been getting out for the last 3 years, and I got one more year to get completely out, and you can have that paper. Because I told him what Lindsay always says, Reverend Lindsay, that it's only as good as the writing that's on it. And boy, his eyes got all wide. I said, you got to listen to Radio Liberty and Alex Jones and Joyce Riley and James Corbin. You got to wake up and turn off the football and get educated before it's too late. And he agreed with me. So I gave him your radio station. More people just got to tell people the truth. Say, you know what? You better get out of that paper, because in 1929 it happened, and if you didn't have something in a ball jar or tin can somewhere at the ranch, you went hungry.
Well, let me just point out, as we started the program, by pointing out that many of the major hedge funds, so these are the hedge funds managing $3, $4, $5, $6, $10 billion, they're putting a lot of their money into cash. They're getting out of stocks. They're sitting on cash because they anticipate something big is going to happen. Would you want to comment on that, James? Because this is what I'm hearing. Are you hearing the same thing?
I am. And actually, just to follow up with the FDIC that we were talking about earlier, apparently insured deposits are at $250,000 at this point. But you're exactly right when you say that it's only worth the paper that it's printed on, and the promises are only worth the paper that they're printed on. And in fact, there was a report that was issued jointly by the FDIC and the Bank of England last December called Resolving Globally Active Systemically Important Financial Institutions, which indicates that the Cyprus-style bail-in is a temporary template that they're looking at, and that in that document, when they're talking about the possibility of converting depositors' money into equity in a new company, should a bank go under, and they'd be able to take that any claims against the company against those equity holders, they make no mention of the $250,000 limit. So again, it's really just a promise that's not really worth anything at all, and it could change overnight. So it is important for people to realize this and not put much faith in these types of government promises.
Amen to that. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-295. Rich from Aroma, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Well, Mr. Corbin, that's kind of shaky, because the paper is backed by nothing. It's worthless paper, and should people be holding paper or holding metal? Only because the metal the government can't print, and it's backed by metal. In 1929, at least the paper was backed by metal. They had gold and silver until Roosevelt, I think, took it out in 1932 or 33. And this time around, it's backed by zero except debt. So should we be holding a paper, or should we be putting metals, or what do you suggest the common person do? Does.
Well, I absolutely don't suggest that they hold their long-term savings in paper dollars, because as you say, it's absolutely not backed up by anything, and every sign is that it's going to collapse. I think that what they should be holding is basically a basket of commodities and things that you can physically hold in your hand. Anything that you can physically hold is better than anything that's kind of a paper promise. So obviously precious metals are a great investment. Real estate also obviously a good investment, because when and if a collapse happens, at least you have a physical place to actually stay. And beyond that, I mean, if people want to get speculative with their investments, I mean, I am a big proponent of local alternative currencies, and I think people should be looking into and investing at least some of their money into whatever local system might be in place, because again, I think it's those types of local systems that will be able to survive the big economic collapse, and really, that's really our only hope for when this these paper dollars turn into toilet paper.
Well, now, when you say local systems, what are you talking about? Like Bitcoin? Are you talking some alternative system? What are you talking about?
Well, there's a lot of different systems in different localities. For example, Ithaca, New York is one of the most famous examples. They have the Ithaca Hours system, which is a time-based currency where people basically earn dollars by putting their labor into the system. I've talked about that in my program before, so people who are interested can look up, for example, Ithaca Hours or Colorado Mountain Hours. There's a lot of different examples in different localities, so people should be looking into their own local area and seeing what's available, and they might be surprised that there's already a functioning local alternative currency in place.
Well, maybe you could cover that next, unless you're going to be gone for a couple of weeks, aren't you? So maybe when we get you back, Barb, we could talk about that, something I'm not acquainted with. Rich, God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us. And hang on, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, James, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think first we should reiterate what we were talking about earlier, that, again, paper promises are only worth the paper they're printed on and nothing more. So, and as we were talking about, in the end, the Cypriot bank depositors were insured if they were under 100,000 euros of holdings. But even that, in the original deliberations over the bank bail-in that was going on there, it wasn't even going to protect those with 100,000 euros or less. It was only when there was a huge protest that they decided to do that. So unfortunately, again, the rules, whatever they might be at the moment, can be rewritten basically overnight. And we see that in the time of any great collapse type thing, like what happened with the Lehman Brothers collapse. We see the rules of international finance can be completely rewritten in the wake of any type of crisis. So again, I don't think we should trust those types of systems to protect us in that event. And I really do think that alternative local currencies are an important part of our hedge against this coming collapse, an important way to be able to preserve local economies even in the wake of this. So I would be more than happy to discuss that with you next time I'm on the program. But for listeners who don't know, I'm going to be in France next week to give a keynote address at a conference that's going on in France about open source journalism. So I will not be here next week or the week after that. I'll be returning at the beginning of December. So at that time, I'd be happy to talk with you about local alternative currencies.
Well, I think that's fascinating. It's something I certainly don't know anything at all about, and I think that we need to explore all of these possibilities so people will have an idea. But I certainly agree with you. People need something that has real value, and I think people have to understand we've had a wonderful run-up, such a bit as paper currency. We've had tremendous prosperity here in America, unparalleled, certainly, as I think probably for any people, for a sustained period of time. But I think that time is coming to a close, and whether we talk about weeks, months, years, I have no idea, but I think people need to begin making their preparations accordingly. I agree with your basic thesis. What we need, certainly, is people who actually have material possessions, and that old adage of the three rules of investing, diversify, diversify, diversify. Parting thought, and I'll let you go.
Well, I just hope everyone takes care out there. There's a lot going on these days, so you got to be watching carefully, and the best way to do that is with the International Forecaster, and I'll be back with all of you in 2 weeks.
God bless. Thanks very much. Bye-bye, James. Have a safe trip.
Thank you. Take care.